Hi, this is Ruth McCauley returning with a second half hour of news from the Decatur area. As is our practice, we'll begin with some of the funeral notices that appear in the Decatur Herald and Review. Walter Snipes, 59, of Decatur, passed away on Wednesday, October 21st, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services to celebrate Walter's life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 31st, at Moran & Goble Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the funeral service. Burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery. Donna Lee Walters, 66, of Taylorville, passed away on Tuesday, October 27th at 7:40 a.m. at her residence in Taylorville. Visitation will be held on Friday, that's tomorrow, October 30th, from 4 to 7 p.m. at Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville. Funeral services will be held Friday, October 30th, and that's the same day, that's tomorrow, October 30th, at 7 p.m. at the Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville, with Holly Reckers officiating. Burial will be in Huff Cemetery in Cibola, Missouri, on Saturday, October 31st, at 1 p.m. Katie Marie Yoder Miller, 67, of Lovington, Illinois, passed away at 9:26 a.m. on Wednesday, October 28th, at her residence in Lovington, Illinois. Visitation will be held anytime after 1 p.m. on Thursday, that's today, October 29th, at the family residence, 1352 State Highway 133, Lovington, Illinois. A funeral service will be held at 9 a.m. Saturday, October 31st, at the family residence. Burial will be in the Otto Cemetery in Arthur, Illinois. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Margaret Marie Peggy Mathias, 85, of Harristown, passed away on Monday, October 26th, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Services to celebrate Peggy's life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 31st, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, October 30th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Harristown Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the Community of Christ Church. Here is a special obituary or tribute written by Valerie Wells, an H&R staff writer. Co-workers recall school officials' kindness. On the job, James Hendren was all business, straight to the point, no nonsense. But in his private life, he loved to have fun, tell stories, and travel. His obituary asked friends to celebrate his life after the funeral with a proper Irish send-off. Hendren died at age 73 on October 8th after a battle with cancer. He served as the Decatur School District's Director of Business Affairs from 1977 until his retirement in June 2000. Hendren wasn't the kind of man who talked about his accomplishments, and his son Jim, he grew up in a tough Chicago neighborhood and always went to Catholic schools, but his own children had a public school education because his son said he didn't feel right taking a salary from public schools and sending his kids to parochial schools. For his 70th birthday, his children threw a party at the Knights of Columbus and hired a pipe and drum band to surprise him, and there was a bagpiper in his wake, too. His faith had a lot to do with the way he was, the younger Hendren said. I met Jim for the first time in January 1986, said Mike Sidoroff, director of buildings and grounds for the school district. I went to the Kyle building to fill out an application for the open engineer's position in the maintenance department. Jim interviewed me on the spot and subsequently offered me the position. Jim was well respected throughout the state in the education community. He was a great mentor and always had a real life story to share to make his point. School board member B.A. Butts, retired as a teacher, principal, and central office administrator, knew Hendren well. They worked together, but Butts also took a trip to Ireland with Hendren once. He was nose to the grindstone, Butts said. You worked. There was no play, and his area of building was quiet, people on task and getting the job done. And if they didn't know how to do the job, he would see to it that they were tutored. He prided himself on the fact that he did know his craft and was a business major and could tell us what was best from a business perspective. Hendren was also much sought after for advice, said his secretary, Betty Hill, who worked for him until his retirement. He was very active in his community, particularly the Knights of Columbus, and gave financial and career advice readily to anyone who asked. He was always there, always helping people. Really a wonderful man, Hill said. He was a very much alive kind of man, bigger than life. Mamie M. Matlock, 79, of Shelbyville, passed away peacefully at 5 p.m. on Tuesday, October 27th, surrounded by her family at home. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 31st, in Howan Yawkey Funeral Home in Shelbyville, with the Reverend Don Jeffries officiating. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Bethany Cemetery near Assumption, Illinois. Memorial donations may be given to Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois, Lincolnland. Oops, I'm sorry, there was a comma there. To Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois, to Lincolnland Visiting Nurses, or to the First Assembly of God Church in Shelbyville. James D. Jim Gillum, 92, of Decatur, passed away at 1:35 p.m. Tuesday, October 27th, in his residence. A graveside service to celebrate Jim's life will be held at 2:30 p.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, October 30th, in Mount Gilead Cemetery in Decatur, with military honors provided by the Macon County Honor Guard and the U.S. Navy Honors Team. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 1 to 2 p.m. Friday afternoon at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion. Memorials may be made to the Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois Charitable Fund. Dwayne Michael Young, 58, of Decatur, departed this life on Monday, October 26th, at Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 31st, with visitation 1 hour before the service at House of Miracles Pentecostal Church. Burial will take place at Macon County Memorial Park. Professional services have been entrusted to the Walker Funeral Service. Elizabeth J. Miller, 89, of Arthur, passed away at 10:15 p.m. on Tuesday, October 27th, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. today, that's Thursday, October 29th, and on Friday, October 30th, from 2 to 4 p.m., and 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., all at Sunnyside Mennonite Church, Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 31st, at the Sunnyside Mennonite Church, with the Reverend Larry Rock officiating. Burial will be in the Sunnyside Mennonite Church Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Okay, we're turning now to the opinions section of the Decatur Herald and Review, and we pick up the editorial written by the staff there. Saunders will be a tough act to follow. The Richland Community Board, Community College Board of Trustees has started the task of replacing Gail Saunders as Richland Community College president. Good luck to the board on what may be a next to impossible task. Saunders announced last week that she is retiring from the college she has served for the past 15 years. She said she's retiring to spend more time with her family and to enjoy her retirement years with her husband, Rich. She started the job at as Richland president in August 2001, and when she steps down this spring, she will have worked 40 years as an administrator in higher education, including 33 years in Illinois Community College administration. "I'm confident and hopeful the college is the best it's ever been," she said. "I determined it's a good time to step away. We've had an electrifying way the semester has started, and the college is going to be good heading into the future." The growth and accomplishments during her time at Richland are numerous, but most of them can be placed under one category: responding to the community's needs. Richland has proven to be nimble when it comes to assessing and addressing needs. There is physical evidence of that ability in the new buildings and programs that dot the campus: the Culinary Arts Institute, the Duane O. Andreas Agribusiness Education Center, the Center for Sustainability and Innovation, and the National Sequestration Education Center. Other projects have included the Workforce Development Institute, Scherer Industrial Technology Center, Schrott Health Center as Health Education Center, Adele P. Glenn Early Child Education Center, and Innovation and Mathematics Enrichment Center. In addition, the Heartland Technical Academy relocated to the Richland campus in 2014, and the Student Success Center is in the works, but dependent on state funding. The campus became one of the permanent hosts for the Farm Progress Show in 2005. After hosting six shows, a $1 million expansion of Progress City USA was completed. The vision to bring the show to Decatur, which involved many aspects of the community, has solidified the area as the center of agribusiness. Saunders has made the college an integral part of the community by responding to the needs of business, Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said. Saunders didn't isolate herself on campus. Didn't isolate herself on campus. She has been an integral part of the community during the last 15 years, serving on a number of volunteer boards. As president and as a community leader, Saunders has shown the leadership skills and the compassion that make things happen. The next president will undoubtedly have a tough act to follow, but that task will be eased by the momentum that has been established under Saunders' leadership. We have a couple letters to the editor which express the opinions of various readers. Our first one is signed by Ronald I. Hancock, president and owner of Hancock Carriers Olney, and it carries the headline, "Clean Energy Line Would Create Many Local Jobs." In 1984, I founded Hancock Carriers with a single tractor trailer. Today, from our base in Olney, we operate a fleet of tractors serving customers throughout the continental 48 states. We worked hard to be where we are today, and we're proud to keep 50 local workers employed in central Illinois. We support Grain Belt Express's clean energy line because the project would create many jobs, not only among truck drivers, trucking maintenance and support staff, but also throughout the entire wind energy and transmission line supply chain. Aggregate suppliers, engineering and surveying firms, hotels, restaurants, and many other local businesses along the route of the clean energy line would benefit from this important project. When construction of the clean energy line is underway through central Illinois, the project would create some 1,500 jobs and help reduce our region's troubling level of unemployment. I encourage the Illinois Commerce Commission to help our local economies by approving plans to build the Great Belt Express clean energy line throughout central Illinois. Again, a letter to the editor. Signed by Ronald I. Hancock. Our next article was signed by Debbie Creek, and it carries the headline, "Do Additional Trains Really Benefit Decatur?" How is the new railroad so great for Decatur residents? It is a mystery to me. I know that it benefits the companies and factories to move products in and out of town, but how many full-time jobs did it create for Decatur? I live in the Brush College area, and almost every day I get stopped by a train either going home or to work. I am sure my supervisors are tired of hearing, "I'll be there, there's a train on the track." Once I get home, I have the joy of hearing train whistles all night long. Is this normal for the trains to toot hello while still in the yard? Don't let me forget the booming like thunder when cars couple. Did everyone forget the explosion in the 1970s? Whatever happened to the rumor I used to hear that trains can't block crossings any more than 15 minutes? So far as I know, our area has been very lucky that emergency vehicles haven't needed to get through to our area. I can only hope that if the Brush College and Ferries Parkway intersection is ever worked on, they build a huge viaduct to transport us over this mess. Hoy. I'm picking up the Goldberg column highlighted or featured on the opinions page of the Decatur Herald and Review. Families still matter the most. It's been a good month for champions of the traditional family, but don't expect the family wars to be ending anytime soon. In recent weeks, a barrage of new evidence has come to light, demonstrating what was once common sense. Family structure matters, in the words of my American Enterprise Institute colleague Brad Wilcox, who is also the director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia. Princeton University and the left-of-center Brookings Institution released a study that reported, quote, "Most scholars now agree that children raised by two biological parents in a stable marriage do better than children in other family forms across a wide range of incomes," end quote. Why this is so is still hotly contested. Another study, co-authored by Wilcox, found that states with more married parents do better on a broad range of economic indicators, including upward mobility for poor children and lower rates of child poverty. Boys, in particular, do much better when raised in a more traditional family environment, according to a new report from MIT. This is further corroboration of Daniel Patrick Moynihan's famous 1965 warning, quote, "From the wild Irish slums of the 19th century eastern seaboard to the riot-torn suburbs of Los Angeles, there is one unmistakable lesson in American history. A community that allows a large number of men to grow up in broken families dominated by women, never acquiring any stable relationship to male authority, never acquiring any set of rational expectations about the future, that community asks for and gets chaos," end quote. Perhaps the most intriguing and dismaying, a new study by Nicholas Zill of the Institute of Family Studies found that adopted children have a harder time at school than kids raised by their biological parents. What makes this so dismaying is that adoptive parents tend to be better off financially and are just as willing as traditional parents, if not more so, to put in the time and effort of raising kids. Zill's finding highlights the problem with traditional family triumphalism. Adoption is a wonderful thing, and just because there are challenges that come with adoption, no one would ever argue that the problems adopted kids face make the alternatives to adoption better. Kids left in orphanages or trapped in abusive homes do even worse. In other words, every sweeping statement that the traditional family is best must come with a slew of caveats, chief among them, compared to what? A little girl in a Chinese or Russian orphanage is undoubtedly better off with two loving gay or lesbian parents in America. A kid raised by two biological parents who are in a nasty and loveless marriage will likely benefit from their parents getting divorced. In general, writes St. Lawrence University professor Stephen Horwitz, comparisons of different types of family structures must avoid the Nirvana fallacy by not comparing an idealized vision of married parenthood with a more realistic perspective on single parenthood. The choice facing couples in the real world are always about comparing imperfect alternatives. Of course, that point can be made about almost every human endeavor because we live in a flawed world. It shouldn't surprise anyone that family structure is so controversial. The family, far more than government or schools, is the institution we draw the most meaning from. From the day we are born, it gives us our identity, our language, and our expectations about how the world should work. And the family wars will never end because family matters a lot. Our next opinion piece carries the headline, "Bush seeks to put punch back in his campaign." The Bushes are burning as they consume the news. Bush family patriarch George H.W. Bush is alarmed, bewildered, and irritated. The New York Times reported last weekend that his son Jeb is doing so poorly in a Republican presidential primary battle dominated by Donald Trump. The 41st president summoned his son George W., the 43rd president, Jeb, and Bush money men to Houston for meetings Sunday and Monday to sort out what has gone so wrong that Jeb is now cutting staff. They didn't have to look far for an explanation. All they had to do was listen to Jeb on Saturday in South Carolina. "If this election is about how we're going to fight to get nothing done, I don't want any part of it," the candidate said. "I've got a lot of really cool things that I could do other than sit around being miserable, listening to people demonize me, and me feeling compelled to demonize them. That is a joke. Elect Trump if you want that." "I don't want any part of it. I've got a lot of really cool things I could do. Elect Trump if you want." The self-described joyful tortoise may have just delivered the most petulant political speech since the future 37th president said, "You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore." Bush is correct that Trump's campaign of insult has made the 2016 GOP primary race an ugly affair. But his response, suggesting he take his ball and go home rather than sully himself, is precisely what has sunk Bush's candidacy so far. Angry voters want a fighter, and Bush, justifiably dubbed low energy by Trump, doesn't seem to have it in him. The way to combat Trump's demagoguery and race baiting is not to look down your nose at him and say, "Tut, tut." It's to hit Trump back with as much force as he delivers. The alternative for Bush and other Republicans is to accept a situation that looks more gruesome by the day. This weekend gave us the spectacle of Trump going after Ben Carson, who just passed Trump in Iowa polls for his religion. "I'm Presbyterian," Trump told a crowd Saturday in Florida. Boy, that's down the middle of the road, folks, in all fairness. I mean, Seventh-day Adventists, I don't know about. I just don't know about. This was vintage Trump making his opponents seem alien or something other than normal Americans. He led the birther campaign to portray President Obama as foreign-born. He warns of invading Mexican rapists, demonizes Univision, and threatens to deport millions. And now he's disparaging the Protestant faith of a rival. Trump said he wouldn't apologize to Carson, who, like more than half of Seventh-day Adventists, is non-white. Carson, who has questioned the fitness of Muslims to serve as president, may have had it coming, but that hardly justifies Trump's campaign of insults. On Monday morning, at an event in New Hampshire hosted by NBC's Today Show, Trump continued the vilification. "People are tired of stupid people running our country, and we have, believe me, stupid people," he said. "It can't always be the dummy United States led by people that are incompetent." When Trump wasn't praising himself, "I deal with the biggest people. I've done very iconic things," or making vague policy pronouncements, "I would build our military so strong and so good, we're going to have a country that will be so amazing." He was peddling fear about people, quote, "pouring across our borders," and, end quote, and raping, sodomizing, and killing Americans. He said he wouldn't admit a single one of the thousands of Syrian refugees destined for the United States because these people could be ISIS. He would instead take a big swatch of land to serve as a safe zone for them in the Middle East. A swatch of land, as if he's choosing fabrics for a hotel, not dooming thousands to their likely deaths. Jeb Bush understands, sort of, why he needs to answer such Trump's lunacies. "If we don't stand for people that will die because of their faith, wow, we have really lost our way," he said Saturday, according to CNN, even as he fretted about a possible Twitter response from Trump. "Damn the Twitter attack, Governor, and stop fussing about whether we've lost our way. Americans are better than Trump. A strong candidate would argue that with passion, not muse about all the cool things he could be doing instead." Wow, that all singes a little bit, doesn't it? Well, here we are again, suddenly at the end of our time together for news from the Decatur area for Thursday, October 29th. I'm sorry I didn't get over to the Tribune, see what's going on over there. I'll certainly catch that next week. So I hope you'll return and join me again. It's been Ruth McCauley. On Thursday, October 29th, reading news from Decatur. Hope to read with y'all again real soon, and until then, take care.